Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
Today we are broadly exploring the concept of positivity, positivity as a word itself, positivity as a way of feeling, a way of thinking, a way of being in the world, and some of its critiques as well. So for me, I already have a bias when it comes to positivity because on the Clifton Strengths Assessment, positivity is in my top five. So I'm used to leveraging it for my own well-being sometimes and my own strengths. And yet, I can see how that can be really problematic for myself, even trying to leverage that type of positivity when maybe I could be facing emotions or thoughts and feelings in a more authentic way. But it also has been a tool that's gotten me through a lot of ups and downs as well. There's also the big critique on the field of positive psychology. And then there's people who really subscribe to just this general positive thinking concept. So there's a lot to talk about when we think about positivity as a word, and also as a thought and a feeling and a way of being. So LaShawn, when I frame positivity as a word, a thought, feeling, and a way of being, what comes up for you?
When I think about like positivity as like a word, there's many multiple meanings to positivity. But when I think about it in terms of coaching or in terms of approaching life, it's where your focus is more on what is, I don't want to say good, but the things that are constructive, things that are, I guess, good, for lack of a better word. But your focus is more on what could go right or what is going right, what you appreciate, what is working, what is going well. And then when we go into the realm of optimism, it's the belief that things are going to turn out well, that the outcome is going to be favorable. And so that's what I think about when I think about positivity. And I can understand why people are reluctant to use positivity as, you know, something that you can leverage. There's also the term toxic positivity, where a person might say, oh, well, look on the bright side when someone is going through something difficult. I think that there is definitely some, you know, merit to the argument that when a person is going through something difficult or when they're upset, when, you know, they've lost something, when they're dealing with loss, when they're dealing with sadness, depression, it's not helpful to come at them with think positive or, you know, look on the bright side. I understand how that can be seen by a person who's suffering as dismissing their suffering, dismissing what they're going through, and just kind of glossing over the significance to them of that emotion that they are going through. And there is a tendency to see positive thinking or positivity as a kind of a band-aid that one might put on a wound that's, you know, needs stitches. So I understand where people are coming from with that, but I do want to challenge and question that idea. I do think that when one is sitting with someone who's suffering, it is not a good idea, at least in my experience, it has not been a good idea to come at them with platitudes. It's better to listen, to support, and to be curious about what that person needs, rather than come at them with, you know, just blanket statements like look on the bright side, or start a sentence with at least, you know, and so on. The reason why I challenge the idea that, you know, positivity isn't a very good go-to strategy is because I think there should be some addition to that. I think that emotional bypassing or anything where you are suppressing, denying, ignoring, abandoning your feelings, I think is not healthy. But I don't think that that is positivity. What do you think, Erin?
Yeah, that's a good question. As you were describing that, I thought it's forced positivity, potentially. But sometimes that also goes along with like fake it till you make it thinking around positivity, right? The more you engage it, the more you use that positive lens, the easier it is to keep trying that lens on, potentially. So I think it's both in some ways. And I think it's interesting because I think it's always on the spectrum. And my therapist one time pointed this out to me, you know, someone might have a positivity bias, someone might have a negativity bias, right? And then there's everything in between. And those might just be inherent to, you know, their personality and their lived circumstances as to why they might lean a little bit more positive or typically lean a little bit more negative. Both are coping strategies for whatever one might be experiencing. So looking at everything in between, it's like, how can we bring that positivity into the middle or the negativity into the middle to find some coherence and balance with how a problem is being looked at, or to really be able to feel and access the emotions that are coming up for us. So I think we can't talk about positivity alone without bringing this other concept of negativity and its strengths as well. So I think there's challenges with both and tapping into both positivity and negativity when it comes to a way of thinking, a way of being in the world. I tend to believe that when we tap more into positivity for certain circumstances, we might be able to call in something more for ourselves than expecting the worst for ourselves. So it really also depends on the situation and the nuance of everything about when might it be okay to tap into positivity as a potential strategy or coping strategy, and when might it be okay to tap into negativity too, and keeping in mind that that will flow along a spectrum. And that some people just inherently kind of align with one or the other a little bit more. I think it's important to know that not only for one's own coping skills, but also relationship factors and communication between partners and friends and coworkers, really being able to understand that lens that people are coming from to be able to communicate in a way that is effective and still authentic with one another. And sometimes I know somebody in my life who would say they have a strong negativity bias. And so when we communicate, because I tend to have a little bit of a positivity bias, it's a little bit of a challenge sometimes. And we just have to be mindful of how we're communicating, what our goals are, what we're not, you know, trying to control in the situation, right? It's not about controlling the other person or how they're thinking or feeling. Just really trying to be able to communicate in a way that makes the most sense between two people so that they can have some form of common understanding. So positivity shows up everywhere, I guess. It's not just in our thoughts and our thinking, right, and our feeling. It's also in this communication aspect as well. As a coach, I think it's just being able to explore that with the client and let them find kind of like that life force for them and what's going to work for them and use that to enhance their framing around maybe their own positivity, or leverage the negativity in a way that makes sense and that might be healthy as well. So I went through kind of a lot right there with communication as well and using positivity and negativity as strategies. What about you, LaShawn? Where do you see these come up in coaching?
From my perspective as a positive intelligence coach, one of our main goals as a positive intelligence coach is to help our clients shift into SAGE. That is an agreement that we go into with our client that in the course of this session, the goal is to shift into SAGE because there's the belief that the SAGE sees things from a bigger picture perspective. And then often when we display negative emotions, that is an indication that our saboteur is at work. And saboteurs are very myopic, and they don't really look at a situation in a balanced way, whereas the sage does. And it's more discerning than judgmental, and it's more compassionate and more open to different possibilities. It takes a stance of curiosity, and there's a lighter feel to the sage. And one can be in neutral, or one can be in the sage perspective, which leans more into that positive aspect of the spectrum of human emotions and ways to approach a situation. So already when you go into positive intelligence and you go into mental fitness and that kind of thing, the main premise is to shift into sage and to see the world from the sage perspective, which is in the realm of positivity. However, I would argue that it's not in the realm of emotional bypassing or dismissing one's emotions. We see emotions very similar to like negative emotions as, you know, being in physical pain. When one is in physical pain, that is an indication that something needs our attention. It's the same with anger, frustration, disappointment, upset. That is an indication that there's maybe a boundary crossed if you're in an interpersonal relationship, or that something needs your attention. And that often when you look at something, you look at a situation from a largely negative lens, it's easy to only see one part of it. But then I would also argue that looking at a situation with just a positive lens is also imbalanced and can lead to ignoring pitfalls or risks that could be involved in a situation. But from a sage perspective, it's looking at the situation in all of the factors and everything that goes into it from a detached, discerning view, where one can see, okay, these are the emotions that came up for me. That means that there's something I need to pay attention to. And then we can like shift into neutral and look at both sides of it. What's negative? What's happening here? What's causing the upset, frustration, whatever. And then also look at it from a discerning point of view where, you know, what more can we learn from this situation? What more is going on here that we're not seeing? Kind of broadening the perspective. So where I run into, I would say the challenges in coaching is when my clients are, they're in a situation and they see that, you know, it's upsetting or it's unwanted, and they're really, really focused on that. And so it's often difficult for me as a coach to guide them into sage or neutral. We do have different things that we use. But if there is some reluctance there, then it is a matter of just sitting with it and having them, you know, go through whatever emotion they're feeling while asking, you know, curious questions about, you know, the source of it or what they want from the situation. So it's a very delicate balance, I think, in coaching. That's what I come across in my coaching, is that finding that delicate balance between a desire to shift into neutral and then into sage, but when the client isn't ready, just sitting there and being there. And again, it goes back to authenticity, where it's okay to not to be okay. And it's okay to be experiencing the story or the emotions or being in a place where you just need to feel a certain way. And just, you know, sitting with it as well. So there's that as well that goes with it. And I would argue that is also part of positivity, because it's allowing for things and not really kind of forcing things to be a certain way. I think it's a very, I'm going to say charged or loaded topic, because there's so much out there about positivity, and there's a backlash and there's like a kind of resistance to it, as it might be kind of Pollyanna-ish or quixotic. But I would argue that there's more to it than that. What do you think, Erin?
Yeah, I think there is more to it than that. And I like the framing of the sage that you embrace, or at least have the space to look at, you know, positive and negative emotions and thoughts and behaviors. I wonder if we shifted the conversation away from positivity to maybe a more neutral word that still evokes a similar response when somebody's in the sage, I'm going to say realm. But that might be something also to think about. And it's, you know, I, even when I say, like, I do not like to share, which I have shared now a couple times, that positivity is in my top five in Clifton strengths. I don't like to share that, right? Because that seems weak, or it's like, oh, that doesn't seem like a strength. Or it's this, you know, fake enthusiasm, those types of things that come up as, you know, founded critiques in a lot of ways, but also there is this kind of anti-positivity movement too. So it's also exploring, you know, why are we so frustrated with positivity? And I know you brought this up prior. There are a lot of critiques, and rightfully so, of the positive psychology movement and just positivity in general. So that's what brings me back to what I just said earlier about maybe a more neutral word that might still hold space for us exploring growth. And I guess that's the question then, that now that I've processed this out loud, is we know the critiques of what positivity and toxic positivity and, you know, bypassing emotions, all those critiques of positivity, we know those. But what are the strengths of positivity? And what do those look like too? And so I think positivity can be inspiring for oneself and for others. It can be used in many life circumstances as a tool to support others. Again, as a grief and loss coach, I say that lightly because that's a different world when I put my grief and loss hat on. But right now I'm speaking just generally as a coach. And so I think that there's a lot there for us to think about, like, what does positivity offer? And is there a more neutral word we could be using?
Those are really good questions. I struggled with pessimism and feeling like everything or everyone has. So I had a negativity bias, I would say. And that really affected my mental health. And it made it very difficult for me to take risks and to get out of my comfort zone, because outside of my comfort zone was seen as dangerous or, you know, threatening to, you know, my self-esteem or to my well-being. And so that was very negative. And I found that that really is draining. And what I found from shifting into a more positive mindset was not so much that it was causing me to be delusional or to be in denial or even to deny my emotions. Shifting into a positive mindset allowed me the space to process my negative emotions in a way that felt healthy to me, that gave me the courage to step out of my comfort zone. It gave me the, I would say, the levity to see life with a lighter lens, to enjoy life more, to invite the precious little moments in life that bring joy, such as the taste of my tea or the light in my children's eyes. It allowed me to open myself to the possibilities of the goodness of life. And so that's one of the things that I have found with positivity. And that's one of the reasons why when I kind of chafe against articles out there that say, what's wrong with positivity, or the problems with positivity, or toxic positivity, because from my perspective, I do believe that there is a tendency to use positivity as a coping mechanism to bypass emotions that you don't like. But what my experience has been, positivity in its authentic state, I would say, and it does go back to how we are authentically, like what our essence is, our human essence. And I believe, and this might also be because I am kind of viewing the essence of humanity as good and ultimately good. And so if one is authentic and in alignment with one's true self, I feel that one cannot help but feel positive and really feel the goodness of life and feel those positive emotions, because those positive emotions, happiness, thrill, curiosity, those things are not there. You don't have those things in order to feel positive. I think positivity is, those emotions are a result of positivity. And I don't feel like I explained that very clearly, but in other words, they're the byproduct. Happiness, thrill, curiosity, excitement is a byproduct of tapping into our authentic self. And I think that's where positivity comes from, is when you do tap into your authentic self. What do you think, Erin?
I like the byproduct words of excitement and thrill and happiness out of positivity. I think that framing is helpful as we keep thinking about what it means and what it can do for people and for ourselves. And I think of the word hope as well as a way to maybe think about positivity. When I engage in a hopeful choice or a hopeful decision, that sounds more like the sage sometimes for me than a positive decision. Because I feel like the hope is informed by the context of everything around me. And yet I still choose to move forward with hope. So I think there might be something there to why, you know, that word positivity can sometimes be a little tricky for people. Because just if I frame it in a similar way, I know the context and I choose to remain positive. It's like, well, what does that really mean? It almost feels like it is a little bit of a stuffing of emotions, where for me, like I choose to take on hope. It sounds like I'm acknowledging positive and negative while maintaining a hopeful path forward, recognizing challenge and difficulty and the negativity too. So yeah, I really like this conversation, and I'm struggling right now too to think about how I want to frame the word positivity moving forward, and really want to help clients understand how that's showing up for them in their own lives. And then going back to this thing on communication, for some reason, this just keeps coming up in my mind, just people who may be a little bit more geared toward positive communication and those who may be geared to using more, I don't know if I want to say negative, but sarcastic or things like that. There can be a lot of miscommunication in relationships as a result. So one of the insights I'm having as we're talking is, not only is this something that helps, like a positivity lens or hope, for instance, help propel us maybe in a path forward, there's also this understanding of how when people communicate, they may need to recognize this in themselves and adjust and really try to recognize, you know, the complexity of relationships and these kind of ways of thinking and how they may be different from one another. And then finally, going back to how you have kept kind of this consistent lens on positivity as the sage, and then how that shows up in your coaching, and it has allowed, you know, yourself and others to process negative emotions with authenticity. I think that's a really smart way to think about the word positivity, that, you know, in some ways it might sound biased and sound like we aren't being authentic, but on the other end, it might showcase a level of authenticity that is even beyond what we think. So I'm going around in circles a lot on this topic today, because I have a lot running through my mind on just where I'm at with the thinking on this word, positivity. And I still think that the literature and the field could probably be served better by a different word. I don't have a word. I mean, hope comes to mind, but I don't know. I don't have the word.
Yeah, I love that you brought in the word hope. And when you said hope, I'm like, that's it. That's exactly it. That feeling that, and it's very much sage-like, the feeling of hope and faith, I think, is also part of that too. Because that's tied into the fundamental belief that that our nature is good, that there's goodness in our nature, that there's love and warmth and peace and clarity in our nature, and that the negative emotions, which are valid and real and just as important as the positive emotions, because emotions to me are signals, whether they're wanted or unwanted, they are signals of something. And from my perspective, they're a signal to me that something is out of alignment and or in alignment. So it's positive feedback or negative feedback. But either way, emotions are wonderful because they're a great way for us to know if something is working or not working. It's just like physical pain. If we lacked the ability to feel physical pain, we could, you know, be seriously injured and not know it, or bleed out, or do, you know, terrible things could happen to us if we cannot register physical pain. It's the same with emotional pain as well. It's necessary, and it's a great thing, I think. And when I feel negative emotions, I have been able to sit with those emotions, and I used to bypass. And I think that there's a difference. There's a different feeling when you are saying, oh, I'm just going to be happy and put on a smiley face, when you're really feeling awful. Your mind knows that you are feeling awful, and that's going to still affect you physiologically. You're going to hold it in your body, and you might end up getting sick if you continue to suppress your feelings and not allow them to come through. There's a difference. But when you recognize I'm feeling sad, or I'm feeling upset, or I'm feeling anxious, and you sit with that and you allow yourself to kind of, you know, get curious about it, and you hold on to the hope that this is temporary. You hold on to the hope that, yes, the situation really sucks right now. It's really terrible. I feel I lost my job, or I got into a fight with a loved one, or, you know, something isn't working. But I hold on to the hope that it's going to get better, that this is temporary, that there is a way through this. You using the word hope really does speak more to the nature of what we're talking about when we say positivity. And I do think that if you do use the word positivity, it naturally causes one to think of negativity, because they're, you know, it's binary. Positivity, negativity, light, dark. And I do like the idea of looking at a more neutral term, a term that's more encompassing, that doesn't cause you to think one or the other, where it's mutually exclusive, and look at it more balanced. And I think hope is a really good word, because it embodies the feeling of overcoming or coming out of something, but it also holds space for what is causing the hope. Because if you have hope, then there is something in the situation or something unwanted there. And the hope is this feeling of it's temporary, or it's going to get better. So that's what comes up for me when you say hope. And I want to go back to what you're talking about with communication, because I want to just play with that a little bit more. When you're in a conversation with someone who has a negativity bias, or sarcastic, or tends to see things cynically, or they're more, maybe they see themselves as a realist or a skeptic or something like that. So what would be like a bridging term or language or alternative to talking to someone who has a positivity bias? How would those two people meet in the middle, or how would they communicate effectively so that both parties have a meaningful exchange? What do you think, Erin?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I don't have an answer grounded in research or theory, and I'm not a communication expert. And I see how people do this all the time. They nod at each other or like, right. They kind of just like bypass their communications, but they're still in the, they're still hanging in, having the conversation, but there is a disconnect, I'm guessing, or there is other emotions coming up for people, such as frustration and being a part of the conversation. Why is this person always sarcastic? Why is this person always laughing? Why, you know, like, it's like this is maybe back and forth thinking. So how do we have conversations when we're noticing a difference in even our humor styles, right? And a difference in the way that we communicate with, on this kind of positive and negative spectrum. And I don't have a really good answer. I think just being, I always go back to curiosity, you know, being curious about where that cynicism comes from, or where that positivity comes from, or even asking, you know, maybe somebody who is very much evidence-based, asking, you know, questions about that, you know, what is the evidence here? And then somebody who might be more positivity-based, like asking a question around a hope, right? Like, why are you hopeful about this? You know, that when I'm thinking about it right now in my mind, I'm thinking about it more in terms of like a work conversation. That's why I think I went to evidence and hope and those types of things. But obviously this comes up in personal relationships with friends. And so I think if you have a good relationship with a friend and you notice that you two are kind of on different ends of this spectrum and how you communicate positively and negatively, it could be something fun to play around with and just say like, hey, I noticed that you tend to be more cynical when you communicate. Why is that? And, you know, I noticed you tend to be more positive or whatever, you know, why is that? So I think just having that conversation could be a fun conversation for friends to have. And I do like being around people who are a little bit more negative leaning in their conversation with me to keep me more grounded in some ways in terms of my positive nature. And then it's also fun for friends to have, you know, these different perspectives, and then the humorous relationship or the joking between the friendships can be really fun and nuanced. And so I think there's a lot of different takes on communication. What about you, LaShawn?
Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking about like when you mentioned the word curiosity and how it's really important in any communication to take things lightly, and not by lightly, I mean not take it personally. It doesn't mean that you can't take, you know, you can't see something as, you know, serious, or that you, by taking something lightly, that you don't see it as important, or that you don't see the value of it. But when you take something lightly, it's the idea that, you know, you're two people, and I like the idea of nodding and hanging in there. That agreement that we're going to see this through, you know, and not take someone's cynicism or optimism or pessimism personally, and see it more as, wow, you know, this person is seeing the situation differently than me. So how can I learn more about this situation from this person's perspective? How can I let go of my belief about this situation? How can I allow for differences in here? How can I allow for possibility that I might even be wrong about this situation? What comes to mind, I don't know if you heard of the story about the blind people who are at different parts of an elephant. Have you heard of that?
I have not heard that story. Tale or poem? But I love how you're framing this, by the way.
Yeah. It just reminds me of that story where there are four blind people and they are at different parts of an elephant. One person is at the trunk. And so they say, well, this thing, they don't know that it's an elephant. This thing is snake-like. And then the other blind person is at the feet of the elephant, or the leg. And no, this thing is like a, this is like a tree. This is like a tree. And the other blind person is at the side of the elephant. Oh, no, no, no. This is like a wall, a great leathery wall. I don't know what you're talking about. It's not a tree. It's a wall. And then the fourth blind person is at the tail of the elephant. Oh, no, no. This is like a rope. This thing is like a rope. And so each of the blind people have an aspect of the elephant, and they're both, they're all of them are sure that they know what this thing is. But what they don't see is that maybe this is part of a whole. And I think that's when we are in a community, we're in any kind of teamwork, or we're talking to people, it benefits everyone if we can step back and say, is it possible that I am holding a part of a whole? And is it possible that what this person is saying is another piece of information that I can add, and we can be more curious and see what else there is that we don't know? So there's unknown unknowns that can appear in a conversation. And that's one of the reasons why I love being around people that disagree with me. I love to have a conversation with someone who thinks I'm just dead wrong, because then I get another perspective of the situation, and I can kind of learn to maybe see where are there common threads here, or get even more curious. Like, how can this person have such a different perspective of the same situation, and I have a totally different perspective, and how is that possible? And kind of let go of my desire to be right, or my belief of the way things are, because I feel like it allows me to expand more and learn more.
Yes, I really like how you crystallized the communication piece with the elephant story, but also just what you were speaking to before that. I was like, yes, that is it. That makes so much sense with communication. And it's interesting because, you know, we just started riffing on the word positivity, and it's gone in a lot of different directions, but it's really kind of pointing to the complexity of this word. So even if people just start having the conversations of, you know, maybe you are more positive or negative. Do you have a positivity bias and negativity bias? Like, you know, just start talking about that with your close friends and other people, and see what comes up for you all, and see how that might relate to your ability to, I think of what LaShawn was speaking to here at the end too, to perspective shift. Because when we can perspective shift, whether it's in a conversation or in therapy or just in our day-to-day, you know, working within our own minds to take on a different point of view, I think that brings so much more understanding into the world, and it brings a lot more understanding about ourselves as well. And so it helps us understand how we might be relating to the word positivity, how we might be relating to other words that come up alongside it, whether that's synonyms with the word or it's the negativity piece as well. So positivity is there's a lot there to explore. And so I think maybe that leads to a coaching nugget of wisdom at this point on positivity. And I think I already said it in a lot of ways, right? Just explore this term more holistically with friends, with maybe therapists, coaches, family members, and get their feedback on the word as well. And hopefully one thing that you can gain as you remain curious, as you listen to their feedback, is a shift in a perspective in your life that is fulfilling for you, that helps you lead a good life for yourself, and really helps you get to the nuance of how positivity might be showing up in your life and potentially be empowering as well. All right, LaShawn, I kind of rambled on.
No, that's great. I would add to that in terms of like an exploration of what positivity does for you, or when it shows up in your life, and how you feel when you hear the word positivity, what emotions come up for you, and just exploring what that does for you and how you approach situations, how you approach relationships, and how you approach life in general. And adding to that, how you approach the challenges that you face. Do you approach it positively, negatively, neutrally? How do you approach those things in your life? And I'd love to hear from the listeners what they think positivity is and what they may have taken from this episode. Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Maychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.